Hey, this is John O'Callaghan from the Maine, and you're listening to Mixtape here on IW Radio.
So many things I want to convey, but don't want to write you no letter. There's so many songs that already say the way that I feel is much better. Here's a mixtape to relay how I'm feeling today. A few songs that touch on just what I'm trying to say. So sit back and relax with no further delay. Here is your mixtape.
Good morning, world, from Chandler, Arizona. It is December 21st, 2015, currently partly cloudy and 57 degrees Fahrenheit. We're back here in my bedroom for what will be the second to last episode of Mixed Tape for 2015. Thank you very much for your support. Thanks for listening. It's actually pretty cool. Some of our friends, we played a show in Anaheim, California at Chain Reaction, and some of our friends standing in line for the show were all huddled around a car listening to last week's taping, and I thought that was pretty neat. So shouts out to the car crew, the line crew. Excuse me, Pat does not have a mic today. Maybe that's what your mom should get you for Christmas. Pat's mom, she has no idea what to get him for Christmas because he won't give her anything. So I think he's going to end up getting a basketball. That would be sweet. Basketballs are cool. We're actually playing basketball tomorrow evening. We've tried to make a habit out of balling. We're not ballers yet, but we're ballers in the process. We're in the process of becoming ballers. This is actually the first taping we've done the day of, right? We haven't had one of these yet. So we're all up to date with current events. Donald Trump is still an asshole. Christmas is in 4 days. And what else is current? Yeah, I think that's it. That's all that's going on. This is my favorite rap song right now. There you go. So that's current. This week's episode is all about, well, seeing as it's the holiday season and people will be traveling, I figured we should do an episode about road trips and the great wide open and traveling to different parts of the country, of the world, different forms of transportation, planes, trains, automobiles, bicycles. With that being said, I actually wrote down a quote, which I was going to start the episode with, but I didn't. Vincent van Gogh, it's a quote by him. He said, "For my part, I know nothing with any certainty but the sight of the stars that makes me dream. But the sight of the stars makes me dream." I thought that that was very poignant, very profound when I was first kind of trying to formulate this episode. And I was initially going to talk to different guests, but the holiday tour that we did kind of foiled some of those plans. So it's still pertinent to the idea of travel. It's still pertinent to the guests that I was so fortunate to have landed. But it not only is it profound, but and speaking of current kind of events or current states of emotion, I think that quote really pertains to how I feel right now and where I feel like I sit with not just where we're at as a band, but where I'm at as an individual. I think that the past several years, and maybe more so the past few recent years, have been very integral in shaping the way that the hat of clarity, if you will, the way that rests on my head. I guess we really haven't talked much about our record, American Candy. I think that I just want to say thank you so much for everybody who has supported the record over this past year. It's honestly exceeded every inkling of an expectation that we had. And, you know, going out on the American Candy tour and that being our most successful, I guess, in terms of numbers or whatever you want to call it, but, you know, that being our most successful headliner, you know, five full lengths in, I think that is something that we just want to continue to vocalize a huge thank you to you all for. Even if you hadn't had the opportunity and you live in another part of the world where you weren't able to make it to a show this year, or we just didn't get the chance to visit, I just want to say thank you guys for your continued support. And I really hope that these kind of thank yous don't fall on deaf ears. And I really hope that they don't get tiresome, you know, for you hearing them, because we really, truly do mean it. But I guess as far as the feelings of being lost or, you know, being lost in a travel sense, I read a book by Dostoevsky called Notes from Underground. And that was like a huge source of inspiration for a lot of the songs, but one song really in particular on American Candy, a song called Unlost. And I feel like maybe we haven't, or I haven't necessarily had the platform or even just thought about a message that I'd like to convey, that we'd like to convey concerning what we represent and what we stand for, and maybe an underlying message that hopefully you can, that we can convey, that you can kind of relate to. And I really think that if there were one universal message that we would try to relay, it would simply be the idea that absolutely none of you, absolutely no one in the world, absolutely no one you've ever met nor will live or has ever lived is alone in feeling alone. And I think if you're brave enough to still be here, then you are truly doing what you are meant to in just being here. And I think that you can get so confused, and we can get so caught up, and you know, our egos can totally get in the way of just living, I think, in general. You know, I read this quote that was something along the lines of death isn't a personal matter, so don't take it, you know, so don't be so selfish, something along the lines of that. And, you know, I don't know, mortality and all that stuff is kind of getting in the way of what I'm really trying to say, which is go get lost. And I think that's the point of this all. It's about not necessarily falling into a routine and falling into a rut and falling into a pit of monotony and just kind of wake up, go to school, blah, 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 go to work, blah, 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 go to sleep, do it all over again. I think that it's important to break the routine, and I think it's important to take a different route home. I think it's important to, you know, eat something different for breakfast, or, you know, even just important to have a different conversation with somebody that you don't normally have, you know, one with. I don't know, I'm kind of getting spacey. I haven't had coffee this morning. But let's talk about getting out and getting lost and, you know, going into the woods, going onto the mountains, going near the rivers and streams. Let's talk about my guest today, actually. My guest has certainly traveled as extensively as I have. We've been on, I think what we deduced was 7 tours, something like that. And in 2016, we will be going on at least 2 tours together for certain. We talked a little bit about maybe possibly more, but let's see how the future unfolds. But Derek Sanders from Mayday Parade joined me for a conversation. This was last Friday, so this wasn't as current. But Donald Trump was still an asshole. My favorite rap song wasn't that, because I just heard that rap song 2 days ago. And Christmas was 7 days, you know, 7 days away. So almost all the things were current. But I got to chat with Derek about kind of a lot. And I prefaced the whole thing by starting with his first experience of traveling, his first experiences of leaving Tallahassee, where he grew up and was born. And then we touched on a lot of things. We touched on his first band, his two tours traveling and following Warped Tour. And we talked about their new record, Black Lines. So I guess without further ado, here is the conversation that I got to have with Derek Sanders from Mayday Parade.
So we'll pretend like there's a little ring, 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 ring.
I dig it.
So this week we are talking about the geopolitical climate of China and whether or not Derek Sanders from Mayday Parade believes this will ultimately play a role in deciding who the GOP candidate will actually be for 2016. My guest is Derek Sanders from Mayday Parade. How about that for a curveball? What if I actually just preface the week like, hey, we're just going to be talking about the Great Wide Open and doing road trips and stuff. How are you, Derek?
Hey, I'm doing very well. How you doing, John?
I'm doing really well. Thanks for joining me.
Hey, anytime. Thanks for having me.
Are you currently home in Florida?
I am. I'm in Tallahassee, Florida, in my living room as we speak.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. I know we were just talking. You still have Christmas shopping to do?
Yeah, I sure do. We're getting around to it, but yeah, we'll knock it out day by day.
Do you find it easier to do the Amazon thing or just going to places?
I do both. The issue, yeah, you got to get on it early enough. I mean, now, you know, a week out, I feel like ordering. Yeah, you pay, and then yeah, exactly, to make sure it gets on time. So if you can like get to it a few weeks ahead, I try and do. But, you know, I have a hard time with it because, you know, obviously there's like, you know, mom and pop shops and stuff that go out of business because of, but, you know, what are you going to do? You can't hold back progress. So yeah. I don't know where I sit with all that.
Yeah,
but,
for sure. Yeah. Well, so this week's playlist is not pertaining to anything geopolitical or political or anything to do. I guess it has something to do with geography. But the title is The Great Wide Open, and I know I sent you over the email. I just want to keep it really light, and we'll get into Mayday's stuff in a little bit. But I suppose we'll just start with, I guess, your first memory of taking that first road trip or vacation with family or friends. I guess your earliest memory of traveling kind of outside of your town, because you grew up in Tallahassee, or was it Ocala?
No, it's the Tallahassee. That's right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Can you pinpoint that first time, that first experience that you got into a car or a plane or a train and kind of, you know, took off?
Yeah, well, I think the earliest one for me, at least that I can remember, it was a trip that my family and I went on when I was, gosh, probably about, you know, 9 years old or so, in the summer out west. We went, we drove and just kind of hit up a bunch of, you know, national parks and stuff. We ended up going to the Grand Canyon was kind of the final destination.
Nice. Yeah,
and then we, you know, hit up a bunch of spots on the way there, on the way back. And it was, you know, I maybe 2 weeks total or something like that. And, but yeah, really, really incredible experience. Really cool to be able to do stuff like that. A lot of people never get the chance to travel like that. And that was, you know, kind of my first, you know, bit of that, probably my first time leaving the state of Florida, I would guess, you know. Yeah.
That's wild. That's a pretty lengthy first vacation, like a first road trip. A lot of people would probably just be stuck to, like, you know, 3 hours outside of their city or I can't even remember my first. I want to say it was going up north in Flagstaff, which was, I guess, 2.5-3 hours away. And it's, you know, that for me was like an escape and like a complete environmental change too, like scenery wise. You know, in Florida, isn't it pretty consistent? Like, it's like, I guess, the same terrain throughout most of Florida, or correct me if I'm wrong.
Well, that's somewhat true. I guess there's a little bit of a difference between like central and southern Florida versus northern Florida and the Panhandle.
But you don't get like pine trees and stuff like that, do you?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Oh God, I feel like a goon.
No, it's all good. and then, well, yeah, and then there's, you know, the beach, obviously. Like, I guess prior to the you know, extensive trip I'm talking about, the nearest beach that we used to go to, or the nearest good beach, is about 2 hours away. It's called St. George Island.
Okay.
And we'd go there like just about every summer for a couple days. So that's, you know, that was somewhat of that, you know, first kind of vacation kind of deal, I suppose, you know.
Now, do you have any siblings?
I do. I have two older brothers. Yeah.
Okay. So how much distance is between each of the brothers?
The oldest one is 4 years older than me, and the middle brother is about a year and a half. We're pretty close in age.
Okay, so getting into the van or the car or the station wagon or whatever you got into and driving for 2.5 weeks, were you and your brothers pretty restless during the whole trip? Getting into fights, getting into farting in the back seat?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things where now I like look back and I'm just like, oh man, my parents, my poor parents, and like what they had to deal with being cooped up with us in the car for a couple of weeks before, you know, iPhones and iPads and, you know, like car, like movies in the car and whatnot, you know. But I do remember having a Game Boy, and I remember playing my Game Boy a lot on the drives, you know. But other than that, yeah, I'm sure we were just, you know, nightmares. I remember my dad having to do the whole, you know, it's a typical dad thing, but the pull over.
Oh, fucking and pull take this us, car pull, over.
Yeah, he'd take us out and sit and threaten to, like, leave us there on the side of the road if we don't, you know. And I remember being scared, like, thinking, like, he might do it. Like, he might actually leave me here.
Yeah,
know,
see, so my dad's move was, like, he would pull over because he didn't want to completely turn around when he was driving. To like hit us or not hit us, but like call CPS, but you know, like break it up or whatever. So he would pull over, and then that was when, you know, he'd get out and he'd line us up and punch us all in the stomachs. And no, I'm just kidding. So you talked a little bit about the beach and being so close. As you started to get older, when did May Day really start? I guess when did that kind of come together?
Well, May Day Parade started just over 10 years ago. It was when I was 19. It was October of 2005. So,
okay.
So just over 10 years ago.
And were you, well, first, congratulations on being a band for more than a decade. That's a fucking huge, huge accomplishment.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Before May Day started, were you playing music and traveling, I guess, with other groups before that?
I was, yeah. So the first tour that I ever did was right after high school. I went to high school with Brooks, who's in the band, you know, and even before that, we went to middle school together, and we started playing in a band together whenever we were 12 in middle school in seventh grade, and then just kind of kept through middle school and high school. We played in several different bands together, and always were like focusing on that much more than, you know, what we were doing in school. Like that was, it was very clear. It became more and more clear, but that's like what we, you know, wanted to do. And we decided we weren't going to go to college. We would try and, you know, make this whole thing happen. So the last, you know, half of our senior year, Brooks spent, you know, so much time booking a tour for us to go up the East Coast to Maine and back. And it was just, you know, getting added to local shows or whatever, you know, we're playing for hardly, you know, anybody, 5 or 10 kids, and just, you know, staying wherever we could. We had, you know, no money for hotels or anything, just sleeping either in the van or crashing at people's houses and whatnot. And, so yeah, we did, when I was 17, right after we graduated high school, was the first, tour that we went on. And we did that for about a year and a half or so with that band before we then started Mayday Parade and then, you know, continued from there.
Okay, great. Well, I guess that's a good, a good segue point. We'll play some songs. And then I think we should pick up to, your memories of first starting to tour with Mayday. And those early formative days and super, you know, if you can recall 10 plus years ago, So we'll get into the first couple songs. This first tune is by a guy named Steve Gunn. Just put out an album recently, I think this last year. The tune's called Way Out Weather. Great driving tune. And yeah, more from Derek from Mayday Parade when we come back. We'll be right back.
Spanish boots of leather, it's how I feel. Too many smokes, I want to be
All right, so that was Romany Rye with All the Boys and Dirty Gold with California Sunrise, here with Derek Sanders, lead vocalist of May Day Parade. Derek, you still hanging in there?
I'm doing very well. That's right.
It's not too painful, right?
No, it's easy, man. Just talking.
So we're talking about traveling. We're talking about being on the open road. Derek started to get into a little bit of the touring days he had pre May Day Parade, and like you were saying, you went up to Maine and you kind of got added onto shows and just really kind of did the same thing that we did. And once you could actually kind of justify, you know, telling your parents, "Oh, I'm going to be gone for the summer, running around in a van with some dudes," you kind of leapt at your first opportunity. So, I guess how many tours or how many years did you tour before May Day started?
Well, I think it was about a year and a half, roughly, and not really like solid touring, but yeah. we would, you know, go out for a couple of weeks and then be back for a few months. And then, you know, kind of just as we could, I think we probably did about four, you know, tours with the band I was in before. We were called Defining Moment.
Okay.
And
so
then
you kind of formed your own, well, at least you got a couple tours under your belt before May Day had set out on the road.
Yeah, absolutely. And it really was huge. And obviously, you know, looking back on this now, it's all so much more clear, you know, or it seems to be, but
absolutely.
But it's huge. I think that we did all that because it was kind of like we learned so much in that first, you know, year and a half or so that we toured with Defining Moment, that we then, when we started May Day Parade, we kind of knew, like, you know, how to do things right, you know, right out of the gate.
Yeah.
And just kind of pick up where we had left off with the previous band. And that really helped us, you know, have a strong start. We you know, signed to Fearless whenever we'd been a band for less than a year. So I feel like we had a pretty, you know, strong beginning. And I think a lot of that has to do with, you know, the years of being in a band before May Day Parade and kind of everything that we had learned and put
Definitely.
All together, you know?
So within that first year, you got signed by Fearless. Those first, I guess that first year of May Day shows, were you doing a lot of touring and what was the attendance like? Because I remember our first tour, if you can even kind of really call it that, you know, we got into Garrett's mom's Suburban. Tim Kirch booked shows that, you know, some people didn't show up to. Actually, the majority of people that could have showed up did not. Uh-huh. But you know what? For me, the earliest days of touring stick out the most clear in my mind, because it was so foreign and it was so exciting, and not that it's not anymore, but it was so, I don't know, brand new that I don't know, every little thing, like, you know, the house parties in San Antonio, the, you know, people smoking crack in West Virginia, to, you know, some great friends that we, and great relationships that we formed early on, that kind of stuff really sticks out. For you guys, was it a struggle? And not to say that you guys just went from not being a band to being, you know, very successful. Of course, there's work put in, and you guys have clearly put in the time. But give us a gauge of that, those first days kind of running around.
Yeah, well, it kind of depends on where you look at it. Like, our first show in Tallahassee, the first show that Mayday Parade ever played,
yeah,
was actually a pretty decent, it was, you know, like 500 people.
Oh, wow.
That because that was only because, you know, the previous band that we were in, Defining Moment, and then there was another local band as well, and we kind of, you know, split up.
Merged.
And so in Tallahassee, both those bands had somewhat of a following, and so there was kind of this buzz about, you know, this new band that formed out of these two local bands. And so we had a pretty strong start in Tallahassee. And then, you know, I guess it'd be tough to say what our first tour was, similar to kind of what you were saying. We actually played one of probably like our fourth show ever was in Tallahassee with Further Seems Forever.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Which were, you know, huge fans of that band. And this was on, at the time, it was their farewell tour with John Bunch singing.
Yeah, yeah.
And we did the Tallahassee show, and then they had like three or four more shows in Florida to end the tour. And they asked us after we played the show if we wanted to come, you know, do the remaining, you know, three or four Florida shows with them. And so, yeah, same thing. We hopped in Jake's parents' car and threw our stuff in the trailer and went down and did those shows. And that was, you know, our first kind of on the road experience. And then the next, you know, tour that we did was also kind of weird, because it was following Warped Tour in 2006 and selling CDs. So we didn't actually play at all, but we were out on the road for 2 months, you know, following Warped Tour and doing the whole peddling CDs gig.
Well, let's give people like a true, I guess even for me, I feel like that story specifically is so, it's almost like a fable, like it's almost like a tall tale. And for me, I think it's a true testament to the hard work that you guys have put in. And I think that it really exemplifies the great aspects of Warped Tour. And I think for people that don't know, can you kind of give us a rundown and maybe give us an idea of how much of a struggle that really was, and how you guys managed to sell like 10,000 something records. And for me, I'm really interested, because I know I've asked you guys before, but I've never really gotten, you know, the full kind of spectrum of how fucking difficult and how beneficial it actually was for you guys.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll give you the story. And so if I take forever to explain this, sorry.
No, you're fine.
But
I'm intrigued. So
yeah. Well, so it the idea came to be because, and this is going back on what I said earlier about those years of touring with Defining Moment really kind of helped us out. This is something that we learned. So in those first, you know, tours that we did, the trip up to Maine and back, any days off we had, we would go just like to a mall or something, or even sometimes, you know, a day of a show day or whatever, we'd go to a mall if we had some time, and we'd walk around with a CD player and headphones and just kind of approach people that were hanging around Hot Topic or whatever, you
that.
Know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And we'd just kind of, and you know, maybe we'd sell like two or three CDs for $5. And then that's just kind of like, cool, we got some more gas money. Cause you know, back then it was our biggest fear was that we weren't going to be able to enough money to make it to the next city. And we didn't, there was no really backup plan for if that happened. So
absolutely.
It was just kind of, you know, trying to get everything we could. And so we'd go to malls or whatnot and try and sell CDs. And then at our actual shows, we'd sell maybe, you know, two or three CDs a night, if that kind of thing. Right. Then eventually, one of the tours that we were doing, we played in Jacksonville, Florida, at a place called Jackrabbits. You guys have probably been
there.
And it just so happened the next day we had a day off, and the next day was Taste of Chaos in Jacksonville, which I don't know. Which was, it was
the
Used
at the
time. This was the first year they had it. It was, and it was huge. It was the Used and My Chemical Romance and a bunch of bands. And, it was this huge thing. And anyway, there was like a promoter or somebody at our show who came to us and said, "Hey, do you guys want to come to Taste of Chaos tomorrow? I can get you guys on the guest list." So we were like, "That's awesome," you know. And we went to the Jacksonville show the next day, and then we were like, "Oh, well, we're here. Why don't we walk around with the CD player and see?" And we ended up selling like close to 100 CDs just at that show. And we realized, we were like, "Wait a second! Like, you know, we've been out on the road for a month touring, and we haven't even sold 100 CDs."
So that's when the metaphorical light bulb kind of went off, and.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that was the moment that we went, "Wait a second." So yeah, if we can sell 100 CDs at one show, what if we could just, you know, follow a tour like this, Taste of Chaos or Warped Tour or whatever? And that's how the idea kind of came to be. And we ended up doing it with Defining Moment first. We followed Warped Tour in 2005 and sold CDs, you know, the whole summer.
So you had done this. This was your second go.
Yeah.
Following the whole thing.
Exactly. Yeah. We followed it in 2005, and we sold 10,000 CDs with that band, with Defining Moment.
No way. Of
an EP that we had just, you know, recorded ourselves and released, you know, had pressed ourselves. And we just, that came from just, you know, that idea of like, we think we could sell, you know, close to 100 CDs a day or whatever. So we did that, and then it was not long after that that band broke up. It was maybe like a month or two after we had got back from following Warped Tour.
Okay.
And there were a bunch of personal reasons. We kind of like, it was the same thing for our band and with the other band. It was, you know, there were some other guys that weren't as committed or things that were holding them back. And so we started Media Parade, and then that was like, from day one, we were like, "All right, we have to go record. First thing we need to do is record, you know, a 6-song EP, get it pressed ourselves, and then follow Warped Tour again, 2006, and then sell CDs at this one." And so that's what we did. And yeah, it's such a crazy thing. Thinking back on it now, it's I wish that I had more. I didn't have, you know, a cell phone back then.
Yeah.
I wasn't like taking pictures. I wasn't taking video or anything. So I don't really have much to look back on from that time. So sometimes it's crazy.
Just the memories alone, you know.
Yeah.
It's such a taxing yet rewarding tour, even in a fucking luxurious, you know, 12-passenger bus, you know, with somebody else driving. But, you know, for me, I remember we did it for 10 days, which pales in comparison to, you know, two runs with two different bands. But for me, that might have been the most grueling 10 days. I mean, Pat, can you think of any other 10 days that we've been on tour that was fucking worse? It was, you know, but for us, I think that what made it all worth it was, you know, being a fan first and going to Warped Tour. And then, you know, just being able to say, "Yeah, I was a part of that, but on the other side of the fence," I think was what really kind of, you know, kept morale high. And I wish I had an applause thing for for Mayday and for not only for Mayday, but for you for doing it twice, and for Brooks.
And Cabbage too. Yeah.
Oh, and Cabby. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I'll give you guys pats on the back when I see you in a couple months here. Let's jump into a few more songs, and then we'll come back and we will talk about our touring history together and traveling and getting into trouble on the road. Kurt Vile, Walking on a Pretty Day, Waking on a Pretty Day. That's all that needs to be said. Here it is. Thank you. That was Kevin Morby with Wild Side and Horse Thief with Dead Drum. Still here with Derek Sanders from Mayday. Derek, thanks very much for taking the time. It's been awesome talking to you. I've felt more and more comfortable week by week as these things go on. So I hope you're still enjoying this.
Yeah, I absolutely am. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. So Mayday Parade, I specifically remember when we first heard about you guys, and it wasn't because we'd met you, it was because we had met Every Avenue at Mojo's, right? In Chicago. I'm speaking to Pat, sorry.
No, that's all right.
I'm getting affirmation from Pat. But I remember Every Avenue had just signed with Fearless, and had at least hipped us, or at least me, to, oh yeah, there's so-and-so on the label, there's so-and-so on the label. So, of course, we were super fucking giddy because Fearless was interested in what we were doing. So I went, and I'm sure Pat was aware of who you guys were from probably before you guys even had the idea of being a band. He's he's that keen. But yeah, we started to listen, and you know, I think what's been great about your band is the maturity of sound just from the get go. I think that you guys have done a great job of distancing yourself from the surrounding sonic, you know, elements within whatever scene that we've been clumped into. And I think that that's why, you know, we love going on the road with you guys, is because you guys are a great band, not only in the studio, but then it translates very well live. And I think you guys do something very different than a lot of the other bands that have sprouted up along the way. So I guess let's dive into that first tour that we did together. What year, Pat? 2000 and...
That would have been 2008, I believe. Fall of 2008?
No, it would have been 2008. Yeah. October. Yeah, he got it. See, Derek got it before you did. So it was All Time Low, Mayday Parade, The Main, and who else was it?
It was Every Avenue.
Oh, and Every Avenue. There we go. What's your most fond memory from that tour?
Oh my gosh.
If you could pick one.
Yeah, it's tough to pick. That tour stands highly in my list of all-time favorite tours. That one's certainly in the top, you know, three, I would say. That tour was just so much fun. But that's where Wizard Staff began. Yeah. There were at least two nights of Wizard Staff
and
on that
those,
tour.
For those listening that don't know what Wizard Staff is, it's essentially, I guess when I explain it, it's going to sound like a super bro, like college thing, which probably it is. But so basically you take you take cans of beer, you finish a can, and once a can is finished, you begin your Wizard Staff. And so basically all you do is take that empty can, you duct tape another full beer to the top of that, you open that beer, you drink it, and the process kind of goes on, and you gain this staff of this beer can staff. And then you don't really do anything with it, right?
Well, no, we like kind of made up a bunch of these silly rules,
and you could
challenge people to a duel where you'd both chug a beer, and whoever chugged the beer the fastest got to add both his beer and the opponent's beer to his staff. And we, at a certain level, you could get an apprentice, and there was all but no, there wasn't really the objective of the game was just to have the largest wizard staff had the tallest wizard staff by the end of the night was the winner. So that's where the origin of that was. And we've only had a few nights where we've seriously played Wizard Staff, and they've all been with you guys. Because I'm jumping the gun here, but there was a later tour that we played Wizard Staff on Halloween in Atlanta.
Absolutely.
As well.
When we all dressed up as wizards.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. For those who don't know, we fast forward a couple of years. That was 2010.
It may have been 2010 12. Or 2011 or
Pat's saying 2012.
Oh, 2012. That's probably right. Wow. Yeah.
So we were playing at the Masquerade in Atlanta. It was Halloween. We decided a couple of days in advance, the whole tour package was going to dress up as wizards, and everybody's interpretation of what wizard was came to light on Halloween. There's photo proof online, I'm sure, if you just Google Mayday Parade, The Main, Wizards. But I remember standing outside, and for those of you who don't know, the buses park right outside of the venue, and there's an overpass of sorts. And Derek, I know you remember this because you were the victim of of the cruel prank. But we were standing there, we're all drinking beer, we're goofing around, and all of a sudden Derek gets hit in the head with an egg. And did you get hit with two?
Well, as far as I know, it was just one, but you know, I who knows? It all kind of happened so fast.
So we just saw this figure, this dark figure, because it was like dusk, and we see them on the overpass, and everybody got really worked up, and nothing came of it because we couldn't get up to where they were, but just don't be a dick. Like, I remember that was totally something that I did when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And in retrospect, it's so mean. It's such a mean thing.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. I'm in the exact same boat. There were times when I was younger where I would, you know, go egging and then you're right. And I always knew that I had it coming. I always knew that one day that the karma would,
it was
would,
just
would
building
get me.
Up. Yeah.
Yeah. And so that was it. Yeah. Egg to the dome. And, that was, so now hopefully I don't have to worry about, eggs
we
coming
won't
back.
Let that happen to you, on the upcoming tours. Where does this put us for how many tours we've done together?
Well, you know, I get, it depends on how you count them. I mean,
that's true.
There was obviously the first one, the All Time Low tour. There was the UK tour that we did together in, you know, 2010 maybe.
Yeah.
There was the co-headline we did that we were just talking about.
Yeah.
We've also done a handful of Warped Tours together.
Two Warped Tours, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So this would put us at like 7 or so.
Mm-hmm. It's pretty awesome.
So the first tour starting next year at the end of January that we'll be on the road together for is in the UK. And I guess just we'll talk briefly about, you know, just give us a rundown of the new record. And this is the first time you will have been over to the UK with this record, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So I'm very excited to see, you know, what that's like over there. It's as you know, it's sometimes different, you know, like there are songs that maybe are stronger, like in the US that might not be as strong in the UK and vice versa. So I'm very excited to see how it turns out. And we're very pumped about the new record. And if I can say, you know, when what you talked about earlier about our, you know, sound, you know, maturing or whatever. And with this newest record, certainly a lot of that is inspired by you guys. We all love what you guys do, the main and that you guys have, I feel like for a while now, you know, really kind of set yourselves apart from what everyone else, like you said, you know, a lot of our peers or whatnot are doing and just have a very, very rock and roll, a true rock and roll sound, I think. And so a lot of this new record was kind of trying to do something similar to what you guys have done. So,
well, that's awesome. For those who don't know, and thank you for the compliment, that really mm-hmm. means a lot. Give us just a quick backstory of who recorded the album and where it was done. And I know that, you know, you guys recorded in a church, I believe.
Yeah, yeah. So it was with Mike Sapone, who has done, you know, a handful of brand new records and Taking Back Sunday records and Straylight Run and all that, you know. So we're just huge fans of everything he's done, and we approached him, and he was down to do it. We recorded it in West Hurley, New York, which is very close to Woodstock, New York, which the festival, Woodstock Festival, started. And it's just beautiful. It's up in the Catskill Mountains, beautiful little town. And this old church that they've converted into a studio. It's just up on this hill out in the woods. It's just absolutely beautiful. And we were there. We got to see kind of a transition from winter to spring. There's all, you know, a lot of snow in the ground when we got there. And then we left. It was spring. And it's just an amazing place. And we had such a good time. We were a little nervous about, you know, we kind of tried to do a lot of things different with this album and, you know, take a few more risks and whatnot. And I think we're all really happy with how it turned out and how it all played out. So,
absolutely. Yeah. I guess in keeping with the theme of traveling and, you know, traveling somewhere completely unique to make a record, you talked a bit about the changing of the seasons and whatnot. Did you find, you know, for us with American Candy, we recorded in Joshua Tree, and you know, the environment, the surrounding environment was, I think, played such a huge role. And I don't know, you can't really, I suppose, communicate that to people who, you know, don't, I guess, create records in new places. But did you see and did you find that it affected the way the songs kind of turned out and the way that the album shaped up?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that mood has, you know, so much to do with it, and the, you know, atmosphere that you're in has so much to do with it. And a lot of it for us was also just kind of getting out of our comfort zone. We had done, you know, a handful of albums at the same place with the same producers, and we didn't want to kind of just get stuck repeating ourselves and doing the same thing. So a lot of it was like, okay, now we're in this new place with a new producer and we don't really know what to expect. And it's a little bit more, you know, kind of exciting, and you're out of your comfort zone. And you have to kind of like relearn how to record an album almost, you know?
Absolutely.
And it's really cool to, I think that was part of what was so refreshing about the whole experience. And then obviously just where we were was so amazing. It's topped it off very well.
Well, it definitely worked. I definitely dig the new album, Black Lines. I really look forward to running around, with shaping up to be most of next year.
Yeah.
And if we're lucky, we could kind of schedule it, you know, in our favor to make it all of next year or so, something around those words. But Derek, thank you so much for doing this, taking the time. I hope you had some fun. I'm so glad that I got to actually like find out a little bit about, especially that Warped Tour. That's so fucked up to me in such a cool way.
Yeah.
So thank you very much. It's I really do look forward to sharing the stage here next year.
Hey, as do I. Yeah, John. Thank you very much for having me.
Happy holidays. Happy New Year. And I will be seeing you at the end of January.
That sounds perfect. Thanks, John.
Awesome, man. That was The War on Drugs with Eyes to the Wind and U.S. Royalty with Equestrian. Huge thanks to Derek Sanders of Mayday Parade. I was very enlightened by a lot of things that I'd been in the dark
on as far as their band was concerned. I think they're such sweethearts, and it's so great to see a band that, I don't know, that we really gel with, you know, being able to kind of continue doing what they love and you know, I guess sharing the road with them in January and beyond will be very great. So thanks to Derek. We're going to end this podcast, no, this radio show, my bad, with a cover. I know we kind of copped out last week, but that was because we were all, you know, all sixes and sevens. I chose a song by one of my favorite artists of all time, Tom Petty. I decided to do the song Wildflowers. And yeah, I guess here it is. Oh, so pretty, John. Such a good job, man. That was me with Wildflowers by Tom Petty. Thanks again for tuning in this week to Mixtape. Again, this is the second to last episode. My final episode next week, I think it's a special one. I want to involve you, the listener. So basically what I decided, what Pat and I kind of teamed up and we thought that it would be great to make a New Year's, sort of a New Year's resolution mixtape, a playlist. So basically what I want to do, I want to talk to you about some of your resolutions. And I'll talk about it next week more in depth, but I stopped thinking that that was such a silly thing. And now, like, all the memes are going to come out about, like, oh, great, it's new year, new me bullshit. But I really do feel, because I did set some of my own resolutions this past year, and I stuck to them pretty damn well. And I feel like it, whatever it takes, that's all I'm trying to get at. So basically what I want you guys to do, I want to hear what your resolutions are. I'm going to formulate a playlist. I want to get you guys to hashtag mixtape, submit your resolutions. I will pick a few. I'll try to pick, like, you know, I don't even know. Well, basically what we're going to do is, if you follow the main on Twitter, I'll be able to direct message you back. And I'm going to coordinate a Skype call between us. And that's how we've been recording all these calls. So I'll handpick you guys. I'll get about, I don't know, however many I can fit into the episode. And yeah, I just want to hear what you guys, I want to talk to people. I want to talk to people that I already don't necessarily have a great rapport with. So let's hashtag mixtape, submit your resolutions, however silly, however serious, I want to talk to you. Make sure you follow, again, it's imperative that you follow the main on Twitter so that I can direct message you and hit you with my Skype name. It's That's So Raven 67. That was actually my AIM name. But yeah, thanks again. Again, next week is the finale, the huge grand grande venti finale. That's venti is large in Starbucks vernacular or Starbucks vocabulary, not vernacular. Yeah, thanks to Derek Sanders. Merry Christmas, everybody. Happy Hanukkah. Merry Kwanzaa. Merry Festivus. I hope you get your two front teeth. All the love. Bye-bye.